I'll start off by chanting the four vowels. Anyone that knows it is welcome to join in. Shigo segan mo on shujo.
So I'm carrying on with the talks that I've been doing, series of talks that I've been doing over the last couple of months, which are about the teachings that the Buddha gave and looking at them from a Zen perspective. And what I wanted to look at today was what's considered by many schools of Buddhism to be one of the Buddha's most important sutras, possibly the most important sutra, and that's the Foundations of Mindfulness Sutra, the Satipatthana Sutra, which is one that effectively is where he speaks about meditative practice. So that's the one where he talks most about meditative practice. And so it's considered, in some schools of Buddhism, it's chanted regularly in the home by lay people, because it's considered so important. It's the one that people who are not monks chant, even though the monks chant it as well. And one thing to say about the different work, different schools interpret it in different ways. And in some schools, it's considered a list of different practices which you can take on. Whereas in our school, it's considered aspects of the same practice. That's basically in that we always sit zazen, that's what we do. And then also practice that same mindfulness outside the place of practice, the dojo. And so from a Zen point of view, when we look at this sutra, we consider it as talking about different aspects of this one practice that we might encounter at different times, on different days, or even in different moments in the same sit. And what it talks about how through meditation we can connect with, basically meditation to develop awareness, and it talks about awareness of four different aspects of ourselves. First of all, awareness of our body, and then awareness of the sensations which arise within our body, and then awareness of our state of mind at any time, and awareness of the things that arise within our mind, the thoughts and emotions that arise within our mind. And the Buddha talks about the attitudes that we need to have to the things that arise, things that we become aware of. And he says that we want to observe these things that arise and overcome both, and this is a translation from the Rahula book, What the Buddha Taught, which is one of the first books on the Buddha's teachings. It was written in the 50s. Very good book. And the translation that he uses is we must overcome both covetousness and repugnance, which might be slightly 1950s words, I'm not sure. But effectively, the things that we observe, our body, sensations, mind, etc., we must see how at times we can be drawn towards them, to judge them as good, like them, and so grasp hold of them. Effectively wanting them in too strong a way, or we can be disturbed by them, we can be even disgusted by them, and so we push them away. So that's what he meant by covetousness and repugnance. And both of these attitudes from meditative point of view are not the right attitude. The right attitude is to simply accept them as they are. That doesn't mean that we don't prefer some to the others. It just means that that preference is not held in a very tight, graspy way. So first of all, it's the body. He speaks about how we should be aware of the breath going in and out of us, and also the posture of the body, being aware of the uprightness of the body. And this is something that's often used in Kusen, in Zen, when the teacher says a few words to help us be present, often links us to the breath and the posture. So that's the first thing. He also, and I must admit, I'd forgotten that this was actually a teaching of the Buddha rather than something that had evolved in China and Japan, but he very clearly talks about awareness in daily actions. He speaks about how we should be aware when we eat, be present on what we eat, be present when we go to the loo, be present when we're walking around the place. So this, which is very much a very important part of Zen practice and something that is refined to a great extent in Zen monastic life with little rituals to encourage you to be present. Anyone who's done the bowl ceremony, which is something we do sometimes here for eating, very, a kind of ritualized way of eating, which encourages you to be very present and engaged with the act of eating. So be present on our daily actions. So in other words, bring the awareness that comes from meditating into the actions of our daily life. And he also speaks about how we should be aware of impermanence, the impermanence of things. And this is something that the founder of Zen in Japan also spoke of, Dogen, and many other Buddhist teachers, that we should notice how the things that arise within us, the states of mind, states of being, the state of our body, etc., aren't things that dwell forever. They're things that come and then pass, come and then pass. Nothing dwells forever. And so by noticing that, be aware of the impermanence of things that we experience, and in particular be aware of the impermanence of ourself. Be aware of that our body is something that changes, that's not destined to last for eternity. So notice this and live life accepting this sense of impermanence of things. So that's what he says about the body. Then he speaks about sensations. He says that we should notice the arising of sensations and feelings within us. And as I said, he speaks about you mustn't judge them. So you notice that they are pleasant or unpleasant. So it does not mean that you try to say, I don't mind whether I've got an intense pain in my knee or it's or no pain whatsoever. It's not. But the thing is that you shouldn't be, you simply accept them. So there's a pleasant feeling or an unpleasant feeling. He talks about how some feelings are pleasant, some feelings are unpleasant. So we don't pretend that we don't feel those feelings. So we feel things as pleasant or unpleasant, but we accept them for what they are. We don't struggle with them, try to make them something different from what they are. Having said that, Nancy Yan Fu, who was one of our founders, always used to say Zen is not a mortification. So meditation isn't about mortifying ourselves. It shouldn't become an act of ego to overcome pain. And so even though we try not to judge, we don't struggle with things being pleasant or unpleasant, it doesn't mean that we should try to go a long way in unpleasantness, because being attached to overcoming unpleasantness by staying with it for long periods of time is in some way just as bad as moving at the first itch. You see what I mean? So the idea is that we shouldn't struggle with them, but that struggle might just be mental. If you're just sitting here in intense pain, that's still struggling with it. You see what I mean? So we don't try to. It shouldn't be mortification, but on the other hand, we shouldn't at the moment, the slightest moment of discomfort, give up. We've got to find the balance, and that balance is different for each of us, and it's something that we must find ourselves. So I'll tell you a story. Some of you have been to La Jondonnière, which is our head temple in France, and if Jeremy was here, he'd be able to help me out who it was. There was two Swiss, young Swiss men, not so young now because they're about my age, but they were young when this story was told. They were twins, and I don't remember which one it was. It was either Dieter or Wolfgang, and I was sitting in Zazen behind one of them, and I was aware of a huge hornet. There are these really huge hornets, and it was flying around, And I saw it land on this guy's neck like that. And he didn't move. He just sat there. And he just sat there. And it stayed there for quite a while. And afterwards, I said, God, you were lucky that it didn't sting you. And he said, it did three times. So I don't know. I can't judge whether he was heroic or foolhardy. I'm not sure which. But yeah. So there you are. So that's. But there, you know, there are stories of people going beyond pain in this way. So that's sensations. So it's accepting the sensations as they come, noticing whether they're pleasant or unpleasant, but not struggling with them in that way. And then the mind. The Buddha talks about the mind. Notice the state of mind we're in. And it's interesting because I think partly it's kind of, if you compare kind of Indian psychology of 2,500 years ago and psychology of now, things are slightly different. And so what he speaks about, he speaks about two different things. He speaks about the state of mind and the mind content as being two different things. And the state of mind, as far as I can tell, is effectively your mood. That's the way that I was kind of interpreting it, is that the mood of your mind, the kind of tenor of your mind, which influences the thoughts that arise, can be different. And we can observe and notice the mood of our mind. We can notice whether we are cheerful or notice that we are depressed or agitated or these things. And so the mood of the mind affects the thoughts that arise. And what the Buddha says is that we should notice the mood of the mind. Doesn't mean we label it. It doesn't mean we kind of say, oh, I am depressed, etc. It's not a kind of conscious. But we notice the mood of the mind and accept it. And that act of being aware of the mood of the mind disempowers that mood to influence us in some sense. It means that the mood does not have quite such a powerful influence over us as if we didn't notice it. So that could be in meditation or it can be in everyday life. We can notice that we're in a grumpy mood or whatever. And by acknowledging it and recognising it, it has slightly less power over us. And then the final thing he speaks about is observation of mental objects, the thoughts that arise in our mind. And again, he speaks about how we should notice, we should see how they arise and see how they fade away. And be accepting to that process of arising and fading away rather than struggling against it and pushing the thoughts away. But it means that we can, by that act of observing and noticing, it means we step outside rather than getting caught up in the thoughts and being pulled along by them. And that act of noticing and observing allows us to step outside. So when one is caught up in one's thoughts, the moment one notices the thoughts, then it gives you some freedom from it. And that's what he's talking about. One of the things he talks about how to notice that these thoughts are transient and fleeting, and our other founder, I spoke about Nancy, our other founder Jean, who died recently, he used to have the image of our mind when you're meditating being like a radio that is out of tune, and kind of every now and then you get a kind of, and the weather forecast is, so he used that kind of image to show us that we're not as in control of our thoughts as we like to think we are. We don't choose the thoughts that come. We choose the attitude that we have to the thoughts that come and whether we follow them. But the thought that comes into our mind is not a conscious decision. We can choose whether we follow it or not. But the actual arrival of that thought is not something that we necessarily have conscious control over. It just comes. And the classic image, because they hadn't invented radios back then, was the clouds floating in the sky. You don't really have control over the clouds, but they arrive. But you have control over your attitudes to those clouds. And also, the thoughts that arise in our mind are, again, we don't need to be quite so hung up about them as we tend to be. They're not as big a deal as we think they are. We can have an attitude, again, of a certain amount of accepting the pleasant thoughts and the unpleasant thoughts, and allowing them to be rather than struggling with the unpleasant thoughts and running after the pleasant ones. And then the last thing that the Buddha speaks about in this sutra, in terms of mindfulness, he talks about being mindful of the teachings. And again, some schools would have this as a meditative practice, but in Zen, it's not really part of what we do when we're sitting, in that we're trying to let go of thoughts, we're not trying to think about things when we. But that's being mindful of the teachings is more what we're doing now, effectively. Being mindful of the teachings, it says you don't kind of disregard the teachings. Again, this was Dogen's teaching as well. You don't disregard the teachings, but there's something that you consider and allow to influence your life, but you don't necessarily need to sit in deep meditation on them. It's something that you kind of contemplate rather than treat as an act of meditation. So Dogen encourages people to, Dogen is the founder of Zen in Japan, encourages people to think about the sutras and think about how they apply to their life and practice. But that's not something that you do when you're sitting meditating. It's something that you do more as a separate thing, an act of study. Okay. So that in kind of a nutshell is the mindfulness, the Buddha's sutra of the foundations of mindfulness. So I'll stop there. I'll do the closing chant.
Tushikai diki kunjiren kafuja shin 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 jin cho ihi kishurin bujo song.